I'ma say what I feel, and I promise to keep it real.
Welcome to the Red Room.
Well, you gotta be a rider till your fears are diminished and the doubts are behind ya. It's hard to grind and the business got me stressed. In the rent room, we let that shit up off our chest. You know the street nerd has got no time for no caca. Sass in class, yes, that's Mr. Bolakaja. Never have to guess when you're listening to Hilliard. He gon' bring more game than a shark playing billiards. It's all about the crap of screenwriting. It's exciting when you turn an outline into something enlightening. Your pen and words are like bullets in a gun. Write what you feel, say what you want.
Welcome to the Rant Room.
What's up, y'all? It's your boy, Hilliard Guest, and you guys are listening to the Screenwriters Rant Room, where we keep it real, we keep it opinionated, we keep it what, everybody?
2019.
Yeah. On this show, we discuss entertainment, TV, film, music, culture, but our focus is always screenwriting, stories, craft, and shit like that. So you guys hear her voice. She's back again. She is the incredible, yes. Rhyme Edible, the Impedible, all of that. Lisa.
Hey, listen, jam. I have been rolling around. And I said this on the last podcast, too. I've been listening to Solange, and one of my favorite song on her new album is Almeida, because it's like the lyrics is all about black things. Right. And it's like, black this, black that. And then she says one line where she says, these are all black-owned things, you know. Even black fave won't be washed away, you know. And it's like, even from that, it's just listen to the songs on there. If you're a writer, I'm telling you,
she got bar.
She is bringing black Afrofuturism. Look, she got me ready to go and bust out with my black cowboy, urban cowboy. Should I call it concrete cowboy? I got to find a cooler name, because y'all know urban cowboy is one of my favorite cowboy movies ever, with John Travolta and Deborah Winger. Yes. Who apparently they did not like each other when they were filming
it. Happens.
But the tension is so rich, and the sexual tension just pops off between them.
Maybe it's because they didn't like each other.
Maybe they should have just been fucking.
Damn.
And really get into it. Because it's like, it comes off, sissy, and the two-stepping, and all the great music of that. So, and I was just telling Linnell, like, we have black people that been doing that since day one.
Oh, you weren't just telling me. I already knew.
Sherry,
don't act like you were trying to educate me.
I was not trying to educate you. I did not say that.
I got to tell Linnell about these black cowboys. No. Like, come on now.
She was telling you about the script.
About the
project. Not about the concept.
I was telling
her
about the script. Make it clear.
She already knew about it. I was just telling her, because she already know in St. Louis, we're coming through St. Louis.
St. Louis.
Missouri. When they was coming through trying to figure out, but it's making me inspired to go ahead and bring, it's time for me to bring the black movie cowboy experience. Love story. Jurante Rhodes, I'm coming for you.
Get it.
I'm coming.
It's called being in the military, dude. Mm-hmm.
Then we got my girl Linnell White in the house, writer, producer, director herself.
Right now,
y'all over there having sidebars and shit.
No, because he's listen. Like, I thought you were from Long Island. I was like, I never said I was from St. Louis. I lived there for 12 years before I came out here.
Mm-hmm.
You know, got a house there still. I gotta get rid of.
Well, she acting like story. You know all this. Never mind.
But my parents are born and raised in Louisiana. So I get cowboys.
Oh, that's how I want to. It's interesting. You know what's interesting? I was just.
What's interesting? My parents.
Potentially, yeah.
They migrated out of the South.
The great migration.
Degrees and went up to New York, and that's where I'm from.
So I was listening to this thing on the radio today, coming up here, talking about the Plessy versus Ferguson case. Mm-hmm. You know, that set up separate but equal. Yeah. So there was the guy was saying that they had chose this guy Plessy, just kind of the same way they chose
Rosa Parks.
There, because the whole thing was they were trying to say that who is, you know, they're trying to separate blacks and whites on these on like train cars. Mm-hmm. And the guy they chose was Plessy. They were saying he could pass for white.
Yep. Very, very fair skinned.
So fair skinned. And they were like, you can't do no law like this that comes up that says, because you can't tell if this guy's white or black.
Right.
You know, and because he's from Louisiana, they were saying that the Creoles, who were pretty much all primarily
gender colors,
like who were never slaves. They're making a point. They were never slaves. That they were suffering from this.
Oh, they were slaves in a different type of way.
Yes, a different way. It's interesting. It's interesting because I think people don't know that person was such a pass for white.
There was also some marriages that were intentional.
That's Chris Derrick, by the way.
To sort of keep the skin getting lighter and lighter each generation. You'd be partnered with someone that was like
intentionally
to try and
have placages
so that they could get into that passing zone. That was a whole agenda by a certain community.
Boy, I've never seen
I'm not gonna say it was specifically the Creoles, but there were communities of black folk that were doing that.
Interesting. That's fascinating.
Mm-hmm. That's a movie too.
Yeah. Yes. So if you guys are grown, let's
go ahead. Especially when you have a throwback baby that shows up in those genetics. Because when you start mixing, every now and then you get two light skins.
Right. Yeah.
And you have that recessive and it pops up. And next thing you know, it's like, whose black baby is this? That's your black baby. Because it's those genes coming back in. They come back.
So if you guys are grown, let's go ahead and get into the show.
Yes.
So we're going to talk about a couple of things. One, we're going to talk about, you know, managing your reps and stuff like your agents and mm-hmm. your managers. The other thing, Linnell mm-hmm. brought up this really cool topic. Why don't you set it up for us?
I mean, I was hit really hard this week by the passing of Luke Perry,
right.
52 years old, and passed from complications from a stroke he suffered a week prior.
mm-hmm.
And when a stroke first happened, I said, oh, well, he's 52, and he's going to have the best doctors in the world.
That's the same thing.
He's going to be fine.
Yeah.
But then when I was driving from yoga when I heard the news on the radio that he had passed away, and my mm-hmm. car almost ran off the road.
Mm.
So for you young bucks out there who don't know Luke Perry, he's predominantly known for this show. Well, okay. for a television show called Beverly Hills 90210.
Yeah.
It started in 1990. So yeah. And it ran for 1990, and it ran for 10 years and was done like in 99, 2000-ish.
Right, okay.
Okay. Now, I'm going to go even further back.
It ran 10 years? It really ran 10 years? Fuck, that's a long time.
Yes, it ran 10 years. I'm gonna go, and not that Luke Perry was on every season. He took a couple seasons off because mm-hmm. he was doing films or doing other things, mm-hmm. because they all thought they were gonna like sort of you know go on and be in different mm-hmm. venues or whatever. When that show came on, I want to remind everyone: Fox was a fairly new network. There was a time where there was no Fox.
Right.
You had like a local affiliate in your neighborhood that then became Fox. Like in my hood. In New York, it was WNYW Channel 5, and that became what we now know is like Fox or whatever.
Right.
But Fox was a brand new network, and so some of the initial things they had on were 21 Jump Street mm-hmm. and things that appealed to ethnic audiences. Anytime a network is new, because there was Fox and then WB came along.
Right.
A lot of times when these networks are new, they try and tap into these audiences that aren't served. So mm-hmm. it's black audiences, mm-hmm. it's teens.
Right.
So when 90210 came out in 1990, we're coming out of the 80s. And it's like, well, what are we going to, and it's Aaron Spelling,
mm-hmm.
who also did, I believe he did like Dynasty
yes.
and a lot of other nighttime soaps. Mm-hmm. So he's behind this teen show.
His own daughter was on
and
there, Tori Spelling.
I'd say the first season of 90210 is kind of soft. You know, it's like, oh, Brenda's got a dog or whatever. Like, you know,
season two, Brenda had a baby.
Thing, okay, the show did. What it sort of set the model for a teen drama.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you've got your sort of bad boy, misunderstood outsider, and that was
Luke
the character
Perry.
Luke Perry played, and right. Dylan McKay, I think the name was.
Mm-hmm.
The brilliance of the show also was you had a Midwest family gets plucked into Beverly Hills. Like, they right. just moved there. So we're learning the scene through their eyes,
right.
with Brenda and the Jason Priestley character, Brandon.
Mm-hmm.
They were twins. Okay. But then you're seeing, like, I grew up in New York, so you're seeing surfing, beaches, you're seeing a lot
Beverly
of community.
Hills.
You're seeing a lot of community. I'm mm-hmm. like, this is so foreign to
right,
me. I don't know
right.
what it is. And they're making it look all cool.
Right.
It was sexy.
Very sexy, cool for you know, circa 1990.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing that the show did that was really smart was they ran episodes during the summer. When everyone was taking hiatus, the show really, I remember catching steam during the
right.
summer.
Right.
When it was still on, it was like the only thing teens could watch, because teens are... teens and even younger, preteens, are out from school. So, like, what are we going to watch? Oh, 90210 is new this week. Let's
right.
watch that. And then Brenda had a pregnancy scare.
And they were in high school.
So exactly.
Right.
So.
And the kid, you know, and most of the cast was actually, like, 20-something. Of high school.
Sure. Yeah.
So some of them were, like, almost 30.
The one character was 30.
Ayn Ziering was always a little bit older
right.
than all of them.
He still looks good, too.
You know, he was, but so that 1990 is what? It's like. I mean, if he's 52 now when he dies, and that show comes out in 1990.
He was 22.
He's 22, playing mm-hmm. like an 18-year-old. So, mm-hmm. and so that's kind of.
Or maybe not 22. I don't know.
You know,
he was something like that. He was like 20-something.
Yeah, but he's close to the age, and a lot of times that's not what they did. They would
right.
usually cast teenagers to be a little older for mm-hmm. a lot of reasons. But I think that show did something interesting with.
Well, you always want to cast somebody 18.
Yeah.
For a show like that, you need to be able to film
work with them. Because
right.
if they're under 18, you got different times that
right.
you can
yeah.
have
right.
them all day on set.
But I thought it was interesting because I thought those kids actually looked kind of like kids as opposed to,
yeah.
like, oh, you're an adult right. playing
no.
a kid.
No, they looked like kids. They acted like kids. The storyline started to get more mature as things went on.
Mm-hmm.
I will say the things that I remember about the show most, and I couldn't watch it every year, you know, for the whole entire 10-year run, but the storylines that really got me was it was the first time I really understood the love triangle and how much story that can drive.
Right. Right.
So, and I've seen that copied or done in different ways on other teen shows that came along after this.
Like, we have it on our show.
If you did not have 90210, yeah, I did see it on Deadly Class. If you did not have 90210, I don't think you have WB Network that comes along. Right. People forget. Before CW, there was this thing called the WB Network, and it catered a lot to...
Well, it was WB and UPN, and they combined.
And UPN was the
black version of...
But again, that goes to my point. When I'm saying, like, when you start a new network, they had Star Trek, Enterprise, and they had, like Homeboys in Outer Space was a show on UPN. I'm not kidding.
I remember that. It was terrible.
Look, it's like said. The
and dude from
Fox was a like,
different world.
Yeah. Like my dad owned the Cleveland affiliate that then became Fox. So I watched all that happen. I mean, yeah. I mean, and they there was always that talk when before it was Fox when he opened it. I think in like the mid 80s. So they were always trying to get stuff that like people did. It's cheap to syndicate is what it was.
Yeah,
right. it was programming that didn't have an audience that. It was new stuff for them,
and they weren't doing it every night. Fox started small; they were doing like Sunday nights,
right?
And then they were like, "Okay,
Sunday and there was,
and maybe Monday."
For a long time, Fox never did stuff on Fridays.
I think when they start bringing out the X-Files
was like exactly. Friday,
and then they moved it exactly Sunday. It's like Friday nights.
Yeah, I know it's interesting to see, but I mean, in Fox, people don't even notice now because
you're so used to
they're so crazy with how it was, but it's like, but Fox like.
I remember being excited when Fox was new.
Yeah. And they had
Simpsons
color,
and 21 Jump Street.
And they put all the stuff on. Like, they were being edgy because they were trying to appeal to a specific audience. Mm-hmm. They weren't trying to say, let's do what NBC is doing and get everybody.
What was aren't getting content.
What network was Arsenio Hall show on?
That was syndicated.
It
depends on where you were. It showed up at 11 o'clock.
Yeah. So you had to check your local listing.
Yeah, your local
listing. Was it Fox or was it? It was a regular. It was in a regular network.
It wasn't. It's syndicated.
So because when it came on, it competed against the Tonight Show on NBC against the Letterman on CBS
Jimmy Kimmel wasn't on ABC.
No,
it was like Ted Koppel or something on ABC.
It was Nightline.
Whatever channel you had left over in your particular market, Arsenio was on that one.
In San Diego or LA, it was like Channel 11.
That would make sense.
But I can't remember.
Two here.
Was it UPN? I can't remember what it was, but I remember
it was before UPN.
It was five. Yeah,
it was
in LA, it's probably
KTLA.
Channel 5 KTLA.
Yeah.
But be a two in
terms of storytelling with 90210, it sort of set the model in terms of like how you do a teen drama. Like you're gonna have that love triangle, you're gonna have that romance, but then they need to be doing stuff.
It's the precursor.
Everyone has to have a different kind of agency.
Because I think that people don't realize, not knowing history, it's like I think the only teen shows in the 80s and the 70s was like Family Ties.
Fame was one.
You know,
Fame.
They were all in that school, dancing.
Yeah, Fame. So, but
Growing Pains.
Yeah. But the thing I was gonna say is that except for Fame, most of them are all comedies.
Yeah, Growing Pains was comedy.
You know,
but one of the things that was really interesting about Beverly Hills 90210 was
how
big it
was.
They were in their 20s and they were playing high school.
That show was huge. Now this is before social media.
Yeah.
So a lot of times when people would talk about the show, it would be on the radio station. So when we'd be, you know, driving around, you'd be hearing like the popular radio show, and they would do like a recap of the episodes. Mm-hmm. And it was like the precursor to social media. Yeah. So I remember be driving, it's like, I wasn't watching 90210, but I used to keep up with it based on what I was listening to on the radio.
That's how big it was.
And it was that big. It was almost the same impact that I remember when Lost first came out and people started, it was like that. Like 90210, it was this. And then it was like everywhere. And then all of a sudden, every number, we got to have our teen show.
Yeah.
Buffy the Vampire Slayer. Yeah. All those shows
Dawson's Creek,
Dawson's Creek. There's a bunch of other ones out there, and it just got big.
The other thing, I mean, we talk about Instagram influencers now, and people are like, oh, yeah, I follow someone on Instagram, and Kylie Jenner, whatever she's doing. Listen, before social media, again, Luke Perry as Dylan McKay was rocking those sideburns.
Yeah, he was giving you James Dean.
Started copying that left and right all over.
Yes,
I don't care if you're in Iowa or you were in Georgia, whatever. Yep. The sideburn. So that was before Rachel on Friends with her haircut.
Stuff, right.
Everyone went crazy.
Like the clothing styles they wore in that show was like defining. It's interesting to see that. I mean, it's strange that has just been like totally. scattered now because of social media and stuff like that.
And but, as 90210 got older, that's when it segued into starting to have like Melrose Place.
Yeah.
When you have like, okay, they're out of 20-something kind of people. Mm-hmm. So I kind of had that same kind of feel.
And Melrose got a little bit more soapy.
Right.
I mean, people got murdered on that show.
Heather Locklear causing damage and shit.
Yeah.
But I mean, without 90210, I mean, people forget about when Warner Brothers, the WB network started, you had shows like Popular, which wasn't on very long.
Right.
Roswell.
You don't get,
because that was us saying, okay, let's make it more like the teens are aliens and it's more of a little bit procedural, which leads to like now we have Supernatural that's been on for like 30 years or whatever now.
Oh my gosh. So yeah, you just
without 90210 to me was like the foundation of all these other you wouldn't have an ABC Family Network now either catering to that market.
That's true. That's true.
And now it's become Freeform, but you wouldn't have that.
Yeah.
Now.
It was shocking to me when I hear that. Like I said, when I heard he had the stroke, I was like, He'll be fine. You know what? Yeah. Probably got a lot of stress because I know he was doing Riverdale. He's been doing a lot of projects. Probably a little overworked. You know what? It's just his body telling him to slow himself down. And literally, I was sitting, I was getting a small check on my car. I was in Temecula last weekend because they had the hot rod. Every year in Temecula, they had the hot rod. So that's all the low riders come out. Mm-hmm. So I was hanging out in Temecula for the weekend, but then it rained the whole time. So it's like all the food trucks, all the cool stuff, hanging out at the cigar bar, walking around, doing my thing, and it rained the whole time. So literally like I think that Monday, I went to go get smog checked. And I was like, okay, I'm about to leave Temecula. And literally I was sitting there watching the thing and it said, Luke Perry died. I was like, Luke Perry died?
Yeah.
I was like, what in the Sam Hill is going on?
If you're a Gen Xer, he's a part of your...
It was huge.
Pop culture.
And it's like, even though I wasn't like a fan of the show because I didn't watch it, because, you know, I was doing my thing and I would catch, you know, recaps and I was listening on
there.
I was like,
oh,
God, yeah. And I was like, oh, my God. Like, it just really, it was like that record scratch moment. Mm-hmm. Like, I was just so shocked. Mm-hmm. And I just thought, I wonder if people really realize what he means to television, how he helped change the landscape.
Which is why I wanted to bring this up.
Yeah. The landscape of television.
I don't think people do necessarily because... I mean, I don't really know what's the tribute stuff people have done this week and stuff like that, but
My goodness, Twitter is packed with stories about him. Everyone's coming forward with these amazing stories about him.
I'm sure they are. It's just that
it's all positive.
It's all positive. You know, like one of the best guys ever. There's one. I'm just gonna give it out real quick. I don't know who posted it, but they're on an airplane and just two kids, like young boys being just loud in coach, being loud, obnoxious for the entire flight. Everyone's going crazy. The parents can't control the kids. The parents probably throw their hands up in the air like, we can't do shit with these kids.
Right.
And then just like these two boys are just going
white kids,
right? I'm not going to say. So all of a sudden the kids are just being wild. No one can do anything. Everyone's just kind of like, well, we just got to deal with it. A gentleman comes from first class into coach. And pulls out a balloon and blows it up and ties it in like a little, you know, like little figure or whatever and hands it to the kids and they're all just like quelled. Hmm. Like just, you know, oh, wow, balloon. You know, you give a kid a balloon. Yeah. It's like, oh, wow. And that guy was Luke Perry. Came out of coach. And so the guy was like, you always fly with balloons. You know,
you always fly balloons in your pocket?
He's like, nah, I just got to keep, because Luke Perry had kids.
Right.
So he's like, I just always keep them around because kids get wild. But not finding the balloons, if you give them a balloon, they just sort of calm down. It's like stories like that.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, he did have a film career. He wasn't, since you were going to do your Black Cowboy movie, you need to watch him in 8 seconds.
Yes!
He did a rodeo
movie. Oh, no, I saw that.
It was very overlooked.
Yes.
And didn't give him
what I thought he was going to be,
And he was also in the first version of Buffy the Vampire Slayer. Mm-hmm. That was a movie first, and he was in that.
Mm-hmm.
So, I guess his film career didn't take off the way he wanted, but he was such a staple of television that we all kind of grew up with him.
Right.
If you're on TV for 10 years.
It's interesting that 8 seconds, that was a good movie that people didn't look, and that Buffy for I think, not because of him, but because of Chrissy Swanson, the movie didn't click as a movie.
Right.
But I think that, you know, and it's so lucky that Whedon was able to like wrestle that away to do the show.
Well, also people weren't ready for like a female.
They weren't ready.
Superhero at that particular time period. I think there was also pushback in terms of that, which we're seeing again now with Captain Marvel.
Right.
You think after Wonder Woman, they'd be like, bring some more shit.
No. It'd be crazy. Folks.
There is money to be made.
Folks ain't ready.
I heard it made a bunch of money. Captain Marvel, I think it made like $27 million on
Thursday,
just Thursday night. That's a lot of money.
That's good
for one showing. It's a lot of money.
I told you before the show. I don't know if I'm ready for Captain Marvel. I don't know. It's so much of like my pieces of my life in that story. Mm-hmm. her being
just do like Lisa, just buy the ticket just to support it anyway. Just
oh yeah, for sure. Oh yeah, no, I'm going. I'm gonna see it. I'm like, I don't know. Like,
let me know when you go.
Listen, how you know the black community, like majority black community, was like, I don't know if I'm ready for Black Panther.
Right, right.
I have that same feeling towards Captain Marvel. I didn't have it so much with Black Panther. I was like, ready for Black Panther.
Right.
People were really like,
who's
Jeff Thorne? Literally said that. I don't know if I'm ready for Black Panther on this show.
Right.
I don't remember that. I need to smack him around for that because it's like, what are you talking about?
Well, he was just saying emotionally, like to see something that he's imagined for so long, and to finally see it on screen and see it come to fruition, you're kind of like,
it's like meeting your hero.
Same way.
It's a mix of like, I want to see it, but I got some anxiety about it.
I know it wasn't Zack Snyder, so it wasn't going to be bad. So it's that simple. I mean, I knew that. It's funny because he was saying as long as it doesn't suck, but I was kind of like, I kept saying, in my mind, Jeff, it's not going to suck. Even if it's a bad Marvel movie, even if it's as bad as the worst Marvel movies, it's still going to be an enjoyable film.
And the fact that the cast were bad, we were still going to say, it doesn't even matter, it's not going to suck. But even if it did, it doesn't matter. You get to see Angela, we get to see us doing something, and we get a chance to see that. And I can totally see where for Captain Marvel, I was like, oh, I'm not ready.
Yeah, because she's Air Force. Yeah. She's wearing some of my old uniforms.
Yeah.
I got my basement still.
Your trepidation and maybe other trepidation on Captain Marvel is the difference between that and Wonder Woman is that there's been incarnations of Wonder Woman for six years. Sure. We've seen them all over the TV for a long time. We haven't seen a female-centered Marvel movie, number one. Mm-hmm. And then number two, it's like this big space opera, mm-hmm. which to me is why it's going to be cool. See, Marvel finally gets cool when they do the space opera shit. And I'm just kind of like, I've been wanting to see this movie because like this is the Marvel movie that I've been wanting to see since the first Iron Man came out. In my mind, because I'm kind of like Marvel
with her.
Guardians to you wasn't like space opera enough for you?
I mean, I thought it was going to be, but it's too fucking campy for me to really like that movie.
I'm not a fan of Guardians.
Mm-hmm. It's a great movie. I was like, no. That movie, like could have been.
It's like Buckaroo Banzai.
Guardians is kind of
a bad version.
Grow in space, like, oh my gosh. Let me talk myself out of my situation.
There's shit about it that I just like. I mean, the fact that they did that dance off at the end, I was kind of like, this is the Scooby Doo shit that director is known for.
Did you say Scooby Doo shit?
But that's the kind of shit that I don't want to see in this movie. That's why I'm like, okay, so that movie wasn't.
I'd like the tone to get back a little more serious.
Seriously, and that's where I'm like, and when I see Captain Marvel, I could tell from the way they just did it. Just the fact that they killed that Scroll is the woman.
Can we talk about the directors real quick?
I was like, oh, that's gonna be
Captain Marvel.
Yes.
So who's directing?
Ryan Fleck and Anna Boden. You know who they are because they did Mississippi Grind. If y'all haven't seen it, it's Ryan Gosling and Ben.
It's not Ryan Gosling. It's Ryan Reynolds.
I'm sorry, and
Ben Mendelsohn.
Ben Mendelsohn up and down the Missouri River
gambling. Yeah,
playing. Yeah, it's really good. But they also did Half Nelson.
Okay.
If you haven't seen
that. Yeah.
That's a long time ago.
They did. It's kind of a funny story, which a lot of people miss this movie.
Yes, it's a good movie.
It's this guy, a little teenage guy, since we're talking about teen stuff, teenage guy who's like, you know, growing up in New York. Zoe Kravitz is in it also, as his like love interest. Hmm. And it's this teenage guy who commits himself, like goes into a psych ward and says, I'm thinking of killing myself. And so he thinks he's just going to be there for the day. And they're like, no, we're going to keep you for 4 days. And he meets all these interesting people in the psych ward. It's really well done.
Yeah.
And people didn't see that either. Mm. But those two directors I've been fans of for a while. They've also directed some episodes of Billions.
Mm-hmm. Oh,
so they're in capable hands with those two. I'm trying to think. Oh, Sugar. Yeah. Sugar was this baseball movie about black kid, I think it's like Dominican Republic, and his dreams of playing Major League Baseball.
Right.
So again, these smaller films with these it's all about the moments with these two directors. So I'm hoping they find their moments
inside
in the Marvel universe and things are getting, you know, green screens and things are getting big.
Well, no, but see, I think that's where Marvel has made a really strong choice when they choose directors. They don't choose these outside of Joss Whedon, they haven't chosen.
Well, hang on. They chose the Russo brothers. I mean, mostly did comedy before they started doing Captain America.
But they made two really, really interesting films beforehand. And I think the thing that made them work for doing television This is from Cleveland, and their family's tied in with like the Cleveland mob and stuff like that. I mean, they may not say that, but I remember they told us that when I met them a long time ago, is that they are really into that.
Shout out to the Russo brothers.
Like thing. They're really into that kind of.
Yo, bosses.
It's that what Marvel did is they found people who could fit into a system and can work and find these moments. They didn't find the guys like you did, like the big, you did the Hulk, or the guys who went on to do Clash of the Titans, or these big directors who make these big bombastic films who don't know how to do the smaller movements. Right. Because with Marvel movies, I could be wrong, but I don't know if the director's really directing the visual effects moments, and those moments are so like the whole team is doing that. So they need someone who can handle the small stuff to make because those movies work because of the small moments,
right. You know, the poignancy of the small moments,
right.
They have to land.
So let's just bring it back again, just really before we switch on to the next topic. Is what do you want the kids who are writing television and things today to take away
go back and do your homework. Go back and look at, I wouldn't look at the pilot of 90210, but go to like season 3, season 4 when they were really cranking on all cylinders. Check out a few of those episodes because that'll give you like the foundation.
Isn't
of like
Darren Star too? Wasn't Darren Star involved in that?
Or at least with Melrose Place. Go back and look at the format in terms of like you have an ensemble. Mm-hmm. Everyone needs to have some sort of agency.
Right.
Everyone needs to have something that they're trying to do and figure out how
they all need a story. They all need a story.
But don't stovepipe them. Those storylines need to interact and cross. Like, you know, there was the Peach Pit on 90210. Mm-hmm. That was a place where you could get all the characters to sort of hang out and be like, dude, what's going on with Kelly, man? I don't know. Like, they can sort of have those conversations.
This is pre-cell phone, so they...
A cell phone conversation is not... You can write that, but that's not engaging to watch on television.
That's what I think people need to watch when they learn that kind of stuff is that how do you make the drama work without having to be overly reliant on cell phones? Because I think the minute people start doing cell phone stuff,
here's the funny thing. When we were in our, we'll get to this in a second, but when I was in my meeting at UTA the other day, they commented on how we tend to do things that are in the past. And I brought up, I says, I love to write, I'm an old soul. You know, I love to write things in the past. That's just who I am. I immediately go to the past. I almost never think about movies that take place today. I even talked to John about that. He's like, "Do you have any contemporary?" I have a couple, but I mean,
that's why he
out of my 30 why, projects, they're all be. The past. You know what I mean?
And so
where I'm going with that is I'm addicted to what was, you know, before. For some reason, I just I'm attracted to that. So the kids today just piggybacking off.
90210, Dawson's Creek.
Yeah, you got to get
look
into
at Roswell.
That.
I mean, go find those scripts
and give it a new spin.
And you guys can watch this stuff because it's either streaming on Netflix or Hulu. Like you have access to it. Back in the day, we didn't have access to like you had a VCR to record it. I mean, we couldn't rewatch things as easily as you can. So I mean, you can.
And God forbid if you left the VCR in there and somebody recorded their show.
I had to knock that tab out because if you did it.
Yes, if you pull the tab.
Otherwise, motherfuckers would be like salty as shit.
Yeah. Go back and look at that stuff because there's certain things like the love triangle and those things are like the bedrock of a teen drama. Right.
And I just want to say that where I'm going with this is people like Luke Perry, like I think since, I don't want to compare him to Dean, but just James in Dean? The sense of, the look and the impression that he gave
he was Gen
TV.
X. He was Gen X's version of
at that time.
Yeah,
he was giving you Dean as far as the
he
look.
He was cool.
He was a cool guy. You know, at this school, he was an outsider in the school, so it just had a
girls
lot
wanted
of,
to get with him, and guys wanted to be like him.
Right. I mean, he started a
so
whole.
So think
trend.
About that for your protagonist when
that's
you're doing these scripts.
He
like
started a whole trend.
But don't make him perfect. Don't mean because
he's
got to
be flawed.
Because he has some family problems. Like was his dad beating his ass or some shit like that.
His dad, he was an emancipated minor. Very young.
Yeah.
And Dylan, for a reason, they were kind of vague about it, but he had like alcohol issues at 16 or something. Yeah. I mean, just, you know.
See, it's interesting you say that about Dean.
He's a trust fund baby.
Because I want to say, it's so funny about Dean because I think his movie roles, he wasn't even really the outsider, was he? He was, that's like, that was his beyond the movie persona.
I think he just brought that to every role. He just could not help it.
Well, he brought that because East of Eden is kind of set in like the 19th century and Rebel, he's bucking his family. He's not, mm-hmm. if he's a suburban kid, he's not cool with that, but he's still part of that family. He's not like some outsider. Right. And then Giant, he was dead by the time Giant came out. But Giant is a whole. That's interesting. I just think about that now because he.
I'm talking about the impression.
Yeah.
You know that it's presence.
Outside persona as a young guy who kind of who. That's what I think is interesting about Dean is that his outside persona sort of outstripped what his was so different than his movie work. Is what I'm saying. Yeah. And that's what's a great thing about him is that he presented that that bad boy thing without doing.
Or you can I know 90210 gets critiqued because it was a super white show. They didn't have a lot of people of color. Yeah. I think a storyline later on.
Like season 8.
I think Brandon dates a black girl, and I think it was Gabrielle Reese or somebody that comes on. Gabrielle Union, I'm sorry. Gabrielle Reese is a volleyball player. Gabrielle Union comes on, or someone of that time period is like, oh my God, Brandon's got a black girlfriend. No, and everyone's talking about it in the Peach Pit. But I'm going to say, if you want to do, think about how you can do the person of color who's as cool as Luke Perry's character was, or make it a female version of Luke Perry's character.
Right.
Like, I've never seen that. Like the cool outsider girl who all the guys were like, I want to get with her. And the girls were like, I want to be like
that's
her.
That's fascinating.
Right.
I've never seen that.
Because they always, I was going to say, Chris and I talked about this before, they always make the black guy cool because he can play sports. Mm-hmm, he knows how to dance, you know, whatever. So he's always the cool guy. But to see the woman be the cool one that the white guys even want to get with is a different take on it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Cool.
Think about how you could twist the genre and update it, you know, for now.
Right.
Yeah. Because it does have its flaws. I'm not going to sit here.
So I can have my black surfer chick that comes and moves into.
Yes.
She would be cool.
And she'd be cool. Awesome. And she's hanging out at the beach. And okay, I'm going to have to pull that out. That was like my old teen thing. It's like,
maybe that's in your surfer thing.
Okay, my surfer thing.
That would be cool. Yeah. That'd be something we haven't seen before.
And she has her little clique of girls that surf and they do stuff.
They
have the guys.
They
go trips and they go down to San Felipe and stuff and surf.
And turning heads. Every guy's like, how do we?
But they're friends with dudes, and they're just doing stuff.
And they don't have to be like in fucking Texas. They could be in San Diego.
Oh no, they're going
to
be in San Diego.
You got farms all over the place.
Oh no, they're going to be in San Diego.
So the other thing we wanted to talk about because we were having some offline conversations because this is what's going on currently is kind of like I don't want to say I hate the word managing your reps, but it's kind of like managing your reps. It's just more like here are some thoughts, some ways to deal with some interacting. Because I know for sure that a lot of agents and managers hate when we say we're managing them.
Yeah.
So that's the only reason why I was trying to
Interact with your reps. Maybe.
Yeah.
How to have a good relationship.
Because the thing they hate about it is that they
have a good working relationship.
Have changed in their mind. They feel they're invaluable, and to a large degree, they are the grease that makes the town run because of the way everything is set up. You need that shield, and you need from people suing stuff and submitting stuff unsolicited, and then you need someone to vouch for something if an agent or manager calls up a certain company who has proven that he's got good taste. Then that person gets listened to, and the person who doesn't, you know, like you and you develop that reputation, and that's what they bank upon. Is like that's my build, that's my superpower if I have a good taste or not. And so for them, it's like they don't see themselves as being your employee, but they actually are your employee.
Yeah, they work for you.
I would bring it back around. We did an episode maybe a month ago, whatever, about sponsors.
Right.
They're your sponsor. They're the ones that are on the phone or possibly, you know, at the lunch meeting or whatever, who are advocating for you, saying, who is the best guy because he knows this, and this about punk culture.
Right.
Or Linnell's the best person for this because she knows all about, like, space and airplanes and da-da-da.
Mm-hmm.
So they shouldn't have some intimate knowledge of your tastes, what your personality is, what things are suitable for, so that when they hear at the lunch meeting, whatever, oh yeah, I'm doing this cowboy, you know, black cowboy thing. Oh shit, Lisa, be perfect for that because they already have had these conversations with you, so they can advocate for you and they can say, oh no, you've got to have Lisa.
Right,
that's. So they're sponsors, paid sponsors, like they're getting 10% of your check.
Right.
But they're paid sponsors on your behalf.
Right.
Well, there's a lot of things going on right now. You know, we have all been in this industry for a very long time. There's a lot of things that are going on differently compared to when we all first got in. Mm-hmm. Like when you first got here and you got an agent or a manager, mm-hmm. the first thing they do is, if they wanted to sign you, is give you a contract. Mm-hmm. And it usually mm-hmm. is a year yes. or two, yes. you know, that you sign exclusively yes. with them or That's, whatever.
I did that. I made that mistake. And I'll never do it again.
And now there's a lot of people who don't do that.
Yeah.
You know, and
especially on the manager side. Yeah.
You know, like I actually signed with my reps, mm-hmm. you know what I mean? But we had an agreement and we liked everything worked okay. out fine. The agreement looked great to me. So I signed.
Okay. You talking about your agents or
with
your
my
managers?
Manager. Oh, okay. With my agent, I did not sign.
Okay. Got it.
With both.
Interesting.
Of them. Yeah. And that's a whole other conversation. Mm-hmm. So, but things change as you move along and the industry changes.
Yeah.
And the industry has changed that you don't really sign now until yeah. you have some big deal going on.
Yeah.
And then they sign you. Am I correct? Something like
I would,
that.
I would be wary of signing with agents are a different story, but because agents, to be clear, have to be licensed in the state of California mm-hmm. to do what they do.
Right.
I would be wary of signing with a manager because there's a lot of people running around right now who... Mm-hmm. You can just I can be a manager tomorrow. I can sure. make some business cards. I can have a little like Facebook page, whatever. Right. Like, oh, Linnell White Management, and then I'm out there.
Right.
I would be wary of committing like or signing something with a manager because mm-hmm. I had an instance last year. I was working with a manager. He was referred to me by a friend of mine, another veteran, military veteran, and we worked together for about 7 or 8 months and. Nothing really got going. Mm-hmm. And I feel like if I had signed something, I would have been stuck with this guy for 2 years. Mm. Where it
you
really
You always
became,
have that 30-day window to get out, depending on what the contract looks like.
Well, though. Yeah, you should always...
Well,
that's the thing about most contracts.
We never sign anything. That's why I'm
people
saying.
Don't want to put in it. Because like, I've been with a few different people, and it's like you... I don't think we signed something with Gersh, but we did sign with two of their managers, and we signed with a smaller agency. We did. It's like you need to demand the notice. Give them notice, which mm-hmm. is basically you give them 30 days. If something doesn't happen in 30 days, well, you're telling them, mm-hmm. I'm canceling this in 30 days unless I don't rescind it. And you're giving them that time. And then it's basically like, you better make some shit happen in 30 days or I'm out. Peace, you know?
This is after you've been working with them for like 6 months and you right. say, okay, well, I'm giving you a 30-day
yeah.
notice. We're gone.
And you
okay.
should. That's. I mean, there is a couple, I don't mean to jump on you, there is a couple of things. I mean, you got to have some etiquette
yeah.
to loyalty with your people. Mm-hmm. For example, before I ended up signing with UTA, I was with a smaller agency and was talking with UTA months ago and told them no and decided over the holiday... I wasn't happy with way things were going. So I told them, no right now, but let me see where I'm in a few months.
Yes, yes.
And they were like, well, we'll wait for you.
Yes.
You know what I mean? So that's fair. That's what happened.
Mm-hmm.
But out of loyalty to my reps, I was like, I'm not just going to leave you guys because, you know, some giant, you know, came down and wanted to pick me
yeah,
up.
Yeah, see, mm-hmm.
you know what I mean? See, and they appreciated
they
that.
They appreciate that. Okay. I'm sure, I mean, that's like, and that is helpful on like a lot of levels because it shows people UTA that you're like this ethics and integrity that you have, that right. you're not just going to jump the minute that they come because, you know, they're excited maybe to have you, but at the back, it's just like with the girlfriend or the boyfriend, it's right. like you don't want to be with the person who's cheating. You know right. what I'm saying? Like, you know what? Fuck it. They're cheating on. If they're with me because they're cheating on someone, right. to be with me. They might be cheating on me. It's someone
yeah,
else.
Yeah.
It's bad energy.
Yeah. yeah. You know, and I'm not going to know that because right. the other person that they're with now doesn't know that, you know, that's so you have to be.
Well, the other thing, you know, the thing yeah. about the signing was because, I mean, my first agent, I came when I was, you know, first out here, I signed with a woman, mm-hmm. you know, because I thought, okay, that's what you do. Sure. And I just felt like, I didn't realize until too late, she did not have, we talked about this with sponsors on the episode, she did not have the juice to really make phone calls or mm-hmm. even yeah. get my script to yeah. certain people.
And they all talk a great game.
Yeah, exactly.
First of all. Sure.
All, you know, or you win a contest, you yeah. know, and they find you because mm-hmm. you won the Page Awards, you won right. Final Draft or whatever, mm-hmm. and you have some managers coming at you. Be very careful about these people you're dealing with right. because... they're sitting there just scrolling Twitter and seeing who won mm-hmm. whatever, and they've got your name, and so now they're coming after you. They might not have the juice to get you where you need to be. They might not have the contacts. They might not mm-hmm. even be
And you got to do your due diligence you on have them. To. Yeah. Do not feel, I mean.
Like somebody wants me, so let's go ahead and do it.
There's you know, the writer, the director, the actor, you know, early in your career, wherever you are, you're going to jump on someone because someone's.
And
he made a really great point. This is what I was telling everyone about, too, about some of the Asian stuff going on, about how don't think that they're soft. We'll get in a second. Mm-hmm. Is that they're skilled at selling. They have to, if they're good, and guess what? They're selling you at that point. They're trying to sell you on something, so you will buy them, you know? Mm-hmm. And, you know, the trick on that, the trick on all that is that there's no one who wants to buy, but everyone wants
to sell.
Yeah, you know, I mean, people don't want to be sold, but they're going to be enticed to buy. Well, and that's what they're trying to do to you, to say, come on, and they're going to like shower you with all this kind of cool stuff that's going on. And you just have to kind of go with your gut and kind of feel out of
it. Yeah, they're
going to
name drop a lot of people that they know.
But here's the interesting thing. You only get this type of interest when you have something.
Right.
So you have to have some ammunition.
Right.
So you have to have
one. You have to have a script that's quality.
You have to have one final draft or awesome film festival.
Or be in one of the labs or whatever.
Something.
Yeah.
They're looking for ammunition to sell you.
Yeah.
You know, because if you just have a script, all they have is a script to to sell.
If you're in one of those things, you have validation. Right. It won a contest. It was in a lab.
Well, if somebody wants you, and you're going through it right now, two people want you, right? You have to decide which one of them has the contacts to really help
the juice.
You.
Yeah.
What I appreciated from here's an interesting thing, and I'm not afraid to talk about this online. Me and my producing partner Pamela signed with our manager, right? He's been around for 30 years. His father was a huge agent, right? So I was referred to him through my lawyer, who's a huge man, who's a lawyer. So looked him up. I was like, oh shit, he's got some serious clients in there, right? And I was like, ooh, this is a good dude. When I sat down with him, he told me the things that he could do, and he sat down with Pamela and I, and he was like, here's what I could do for you. He's like, you will see the difference as soon as you sign with me. And he was fucking correct. You know, within a week, we were out on the fucking tour.
Fantastic.
You know what I mean?
Fantastic.
And so I was like, okay, this is a big difference. And I went, wow. So where I'm going with that, I signed with him for 2 years. Pam signed with him for one. She decided to do that.
Okay.
So you can do whatever the fuck you want
to
do.
You got to negotiate.
Within
you have to negotiate.
Within a week, you were seeing results. Okay. What I'm talking about is you working with a manager and he hasn't gotten you any meetings in 6 months. Then it's time to freaking
It's time to adjust. Well, it's time to adjust.
Look, this is the thing. I think it's a question of it's faster than 6 months is a long time.
It depends on what your tolerance threshold is and the time of the year. You got staffing season coming up and whatnot.
But see, the thing is this. To me, it goes back to your statement about the sponsor. It's like, do they have the juice?
Right.
Someone who has juice can get, you know, it doesn't matter. If you're in the middle, if it's in the middle of staffing season, the manager who has the juice, who has proven to the buyers and the showrunners and everyone like that,
I can get you a good writer. Yeah.
They can get you shit going in like 2 or 3 weeks because guess what? People return their phone calls probably that same day. And there's and when that person sends a script in, it goes on the top of the list. Yeah. Top of the pile.
That's important.
Or it gets to the showrunner that you're intending
to get. Or gets to the showrunner. And it's red because that person is calling maybe 3 days later, hey, did you fucking read that script?
Right.
And that's the cool thing, too, that you want with the right manager, if he calls 2 or 3 times in a week, he knows how to like get on the phone with the people to fucking badger them, but he's not badgering them.
Right. And I actually just dealt with this.
He's got that skill.
I'm somebody. And I'm just going to be upfront. You know, you guys know this is why I have this this show is a vehicle for people to learn from my experiences, right?
Sure.
Our experiences.
Right, right.
So here's something that just happened. So I'm up for this movie, right? To do this, for a TV show, to write the pilot for this new show for a huge company.
Okay.
Right? That I got through my contacts, connected to my manager, and let him take it because that's his job, right? A lot of people are like, well, I found it, so I'm going to do it. No, bitch, let them handle it.
Yeah.
Let them play bad cop, and here's why. So, for example, I put everything together. He went out. He reached out to them, did his due diligence, made sure it was all legit, and now he's taking it over. What's been happening is, over the last 3 weeks since this whole thing has happened, like once a week, he updates me and says, hey, so I just spoke with him. Here's what's going on. And I'm always, to me, being how you and I are, I'm like, that's too much.
Ooh.
right?
Okay. For you. For you personally.
For me, that's mm-hmm. too much. But what I had to realize, and we literally just had to talk on Friday about this exact thing. I was like, is it too much? So I said, I have a question for you. Is this too much? Are you reaching out to them too much? He says, no. Let me do my thing. And I prefaced
it. Because he knows that.
Mm-hmm. I prefaced it by saying, this is probably why I'm not as far as I am now. Because I'm the type of person, I send it to you and I don't hear from you in 6 weeks. I'm like, the bitches ain't ready.
Right.
They ain't interested.
Right.
He's like, no, let me follow up. Right. I might follow up once. He follows like every three or four or five days.
He's checking on it.
But see, now, yes, that, you know, and I kind of the same thing because there's an issue with that you got to understand is that if you call, this is why you got to get the right rep because the right rep can, like I said, they can call and badger and if they got the right personality, it doesn't seem like they're badgering.
That's what he said. He said, I'm not going to let you lose this job. Yeah,
I'm just checking
in. I'm just checking. He says, I'm good at this.
He probably calls and he's got a cool joke for the assistant and he's got some cool joke for the executive and then he's like, so, what's up with your script? Oh, I haven't got to it yet. Come on now.
It's more conversational.
Right.
They have that skill.
It's not calling and demanding.
They have that skill.
But there's a rapport.
Also, you as the talent, you have to actually work with the executive on a different level. Mm-hmm. And if you've done something, that's why it's hard to ask them for money, to negotiate for money, and to badger, did you read? Because ultimately, if they do turn and say yes, that relationship dynamic between like it's you and the producer, or you and the director, or you are writing, that has to be such a nice, and there can be no animosity about like, fuck, you fucking drove a hard bargain and asked me for a lot of money for that goddamn mm-hmm. script, and they're saying it better be fucking good that mm-hmm. you, because you know they're talking with you, but if the agent has got the money out of them, there's that buffer. That you're not the one going, I called you fucking five times in fucking 4 days, mm-hmm. and now I got the job. And like, dude, you kept calling me. Right. You know, there's always that thing that the good people and good on in this context is those who can make those calls and follow up and get you ready.
And see, your job as the writer is to look at your relationship from your point of view. Mm-hmm. So my point of view coming from where we come from, where we're just like, fuck it, I'm just going, I don't want to be the dude who's calling every 3 minutes.
Let me just keep my head down and keep writing.
It's a little passive aggressive when I step back and think about it.
Right.
But from their point of view, you have to go, well, why is it that they have their offices over in Wilshire? Why do they drive that? Why do they have a house on the fucking hill? Oh, they know how they pick up the phone and follow through.
Yeah.
You know, there's a reason why they are successful at what they do.
Right.
So I have to take a step. We had to have that real deep talk.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And I was like, I need to understand this and I need you to understand me so you understand that what you're dealing with here, I'm worried you're going to kill this thing. Mm. And he's like, don't be worried about it. This is how I finish things.
He wouldn't be successful.
This is how I'm a closer.
Right. Yeah. Yes, again,
and some people aren't.
Right. ABC, always be closing.
Again, it's about the salesman. And it's like the guy who's the effective salesman, the successful salesman or saleswoman, they have a strategy. And to me, it's see – the guy you're talking about, he's at a place, mm-hmm. and the difference between the companies and the individuals, and even the bigger companies is they have juice, but they're also not bringing you into that company unless you're one of the founders. But even if you're a founder, you probably came from somewhere where they all have kind of like there's a corporate culture there at the management company mm-hmm. about how they do things because they gotta fucking pay massive bills and keep shit going and stay big. And so therefore it's very rare for them to have people who don't have the ability to fucking like really close and really do it. Mm-hmm. And they all know how to do that, you know? And as writers, directors, actors, you have not spent your time trying to be the closer for your career.
No, not done that. No.
You spent the time on like, I know how to fucking do the script and make it work, or I know how to fucking direct the fuck out of the machine.
Let them do
it. I can pitch myself. But that's the thing too, is that there's also that the really good managers and agents, you know, it's like they'll work with you on your pitches, mm-hmm. on how you pitch yourself, how you pitch the material. I mean, I remember when we were at Gerstner, the guy was like, come in and let's do the pitch with me a couple times before I send you out, so I can hear it and give you notes. So I can just, because there's one, you sit there and work on it all day on your own and not know how it sounds in front of other people, and they go, "Oh, wait, you can't say that word. That's a word that people might not know." Mm-hmm. Or the sentence is, "I understand what you're saying, but you need to say it differently." Mm-hmm. You know, and that's where, if those guys are good or those gals are good, that's where the skill is. I mean, like, that's part of what you got to choose.
Here's an interesting thing that happens that a lot of writers don't know, and I'd almost forgotten. As some of you guys know on this podcast, I mean, I've went since 2012 since I've had my own raps. I've just been out there hustling.
Yeah, and so as a lot of people
I'd forgotten almost what it's like having a rep.
Yeah,
you know. So here's an interesting thing. So you sign with a rep, they start getting you out there. You go on a meeting and you start killing your meetings. You know, Pam and I are really good at meetings, as you guys know. So every time we go, people are like, "Well, we want to read that." Or you guys need to come back and pitch us whatever, right? Mm-hmm. So what you do is you go back into your reps and you're like, "Well, so they want to read this thing, right? So this is what they want." And they're like, "Well, send it." And you're like, "Oh, I thought that was you." Because that's what I remember. Usually you call your rep, you're like, "Hey, so they want to read this script." And then they send it on your behalf. Nowadays, they're like, "Well, send it and just CC us." Like, I'm like, "Oh, that's it?" You know what I mean?
Interesting.
So but both of them have done this so far.
Interesting.
Right? So I'm like, "Oh, okay, well, that's fascinating." Mm. You know, they're like, "No, you handle it. You send it, because here's why. They want you to start establishing a relationship."
Yes, I was going to say that. Yes.
That's the difference now. Yes. They want you to do that. They want you to have that relationship with them so that it feels more organic coming from you, because you just had this big, beautiful
meeting,
hour and a half meeting or whatever it was. Mm-hmm. Instead of them now
being the middleman.
Yeah, they're only the middleman now with the deal.
Yeah.
Well, see, the thing about that also is that you meet with the rep, I'm sorry, you meet with the executive, whoever it is, you are starting that developing that rapport with them. And it's like the rep hasn't been in that meeting, doesn't know what was said, doesn't know what the office looks like, doesn't know what they're interested in, that you know, if you were smart, then you're picking up on all that, and you were, and that's how you develop that relationship. Again, that's what I was saying, that you want the rep to be the one who is calling, because if you're that's the reason why that you're CCing the rep, because the CC, the rep's going to follow up. Mm-hmm. He's not expecting you to be calling him up, "Hey, 3-8, hey, did you read the script?" But
he knows that you sent it.
You shouldn't be aware.
It's on their radar.
Again, that's that thing, because if you're the one calling up, it's going to start getting
weird,
dicey.
Weird,
you know?
Yeah. Well, okay, so let's recap. So the thing you talk about is if they haven't started getting you sort of meetings shortly after you sign with them. I'll say one more other thing. If they are sending you to meetings that you're not a right fit for. For example, the previous manager I had sent me to, he's like, "Oh, I'm going to set you up with this Netflix meeting." I was like, okay. Mm-hmm. But he set me up with a meeting with someone who was doing Hallmark adjacent type content. You as my manager should know that that's not right for me.
Right.
So I went and had the meeting and had a lovely chat with this woman. Mm-hmm. It was very nice, but I had nothing to offer her because, first of all, you didn't prep me for them, because I kept asking you, what is it they're looking for? Mm-hmm. So I come in there with like either a script, something I already have, or several, you know, some ideas. What? Mm-hmm. And he was like, "Oh, they're buying everything. They're buying everything." I was like, "No one is buying everything. Nobody. Oh, stop with this bullshit." I need specifically, and he could not give me that information, which was a problem. So I felt like I went to this meeting. I'm like, "I don't even know what to do." And she sat down with this woman, and she's like, "They're doing, you know, Hallmark level type stuff, like softer stuff." I was like, "I really don't have nothing for you, and I really wish my rep had told me." Yeah, like, if this bad meetings are not helpful. Or it wasn't a bad meeting. Everything helps, right?
I was just going to say the same.
Everything is good that people know you or whatever. Right. But at the same time, if you're sitting here gaslighting me, like, "Oh, I'm going to get you this meeting. It's going to be so great." Like, "Oh, yeah." Well, and you can't tell me, you don't know that
what they want.
What they want.
But here's the cool thing. The reason they call it that whole bottle tour, I'm going to say the reason. One of the reasons is it's about going out and getting people to know you, right? So this executive may be doing this Hallmark thing today, and in 3 months they move to another company and remember you from that. So my whole thing, and I'm starting to experience that, like I said, every single meeting we go on so far, and I think we've been on like 5 or 6, everyone, they want to read a script or they want us to come in and pitch something later. So that's a good sign.
Yeah.
So where I'm going with that is it's because of you start talking about what you do.
Yeah.
So when it doesn't matter that you don't fit their mandate.
Yeah.
Now you start going back into, well, these are the things that I do.
That's exactly what
and
I did.
If you find that spin that, yeah. that makes you really, really important, and the fact that like Pamela and I talk a lot about how we tend to do these, you know, historic things or things about, mm-hmm. you know, bio stories about people, and we like to just like pull back the curtain, whatever, and they go, oh, well, we have this thing. Like, it immediately brings something in their head that we may be mm-hmm. able to handle it.
Right.
You know what I mean? And we'll say there's no genre we're afraid to deal with because our backgrounds give us so much more meat. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? And we'll mm-hmm. use these things as an example to make them go, they could kind of handle anything. Yeah. And then before the yeah. day is over, every time, I'm going to look at you guys for this one thing. I'm going to reach out to your manager and talk to him. But, you know, every time. You know what yeah. I mean? So, and it's because of you talk about the things that you do.
I get it.
Not because of the things I do.
I feel you. That makes sense. But let me add some context sure. to that. If they're getting you like several meetings in a month, and one is like, okay, you know, like that happens where it's like right. they're looking for something like you that you don't really do, but you just go in and sell yourself. Yeah. Got it. But that if that's the one meeting that gets you in 3 months, right. 3-4 months, and that's the only thing he had going,
right.
and it's something I'm not even right for, but you know, you're expecting something to come out of this, like mm-hmm. following up with me, like, how'd it go? Like, did you not know they're doing Hallmark adjacent stuff? Like, I mean,
this wasn't going to work, but see, that's the thing. It's again, this goes back to, you know, you got to figure these people out too. There's a lot you can figure out about them, because it's why you just can't sign with someone because they want you. It's
right.
like, you know, like A, if you're not if you got one meeting in like 3 months, that's a problem, because there's too much shit going on in this town. There's too many people who want to do something. You've got overalls and blah 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 who just don't have enough material and all this kind of shit. And it's like, where people do, but it's like, you know, like, it's late in the season and they've pitched their three ideas that they've been working on,
yes.
and the network's like, I'm not cool with these. What else do you have? And they have the deal that they got a service. Like, who the fuck else can I talk to? Mm-hmm. You know, and that's where, you know, the time frame. I mean, to me, I look at it this way. Like, 3 months with one meeting would piss me off so bad, because it's like so much fucking shit goes on in this town. Like, mm-hmm. so much shit. Right. Like, it's different now. You know, like 10 years ago, like when Deadline was just starting, there wasn't so much of like a feeding what's going on. They're making so many shows. There's short orders. This the whole town is upended in mm-hmm. a way that there's so much business, and that if you're not part of that mix, then you're kind of like you're fucked.
I gotta say something in the defense of your reps though. They can only get you a meeting as good as your scripts are. So that's the first thing. Mm-hmm. You know, a lot of people think, oh, they just send you on this bottle tour and mm-hmm. just to meet all mm-hmm. the people they know.
Right.
No, they got to send out your script.
Yeah.
They read it and say, great, yeah. let me meet these people.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
a lot of times they send it and people are like, no, I'm not interested. You know what I mean? And that happens
right.
to a lot of writers. And months will go by and nobody's just reading it.
I say this particular guy was like using his contacts, and right. it was a friend, and he didn't even send the script over. It's just right. like, oh, yeah. Like,
he's not pushy enough. I hate to use that word.
Oh, that's why he's gone. Right. That's why he's gone. Right. Right. Yeah, that just wasn't going to work. The other thing is, if a rep doesn't have a strategy for you, like, you should be sitting down every so often right. with your reps. Like, you know, I was with this same guy I'm no longer working with. I was like, okay, staffing season's coming up. Mm-hmm. We need a strategy
right.
on how we're, you know, what would be, what should we do? What's right. our plan? Like, what meetings are we going to try and go after? What shows are we going to try and go after? Who do I mm-hmm. know? You know, what are they working on? What are the pilots that are currently being, right. you know, produced?
Right.
And there was just no strategy.
Here's something
so I was like,
funny.
Okay, we're done.
Here's something funny that happened the other day that I didn't even think about, but Pamela brought it up to me. So for the last few years that I've had an agent, the last 10 years, or manager, they almost always ask me, hey, send me your list of just industry people that you know that you're close to.
Right.
Even my manager did it.
Right.
UTA didn't ask for it.
Oh, they don't need it.
They don't fucking need it. And she didn't, I didn't think mm-hmm. about it, but Pam said, did you mm-hmm. notice that UTA didn't ask for it? She's mm-hmm. like, I said, yeah, what's that? What she says, because they didn't fucking need it. They can get to whoever the fuck they want to.
Okay.
You feel me? I was like, damn.
Well, no, because here's the thing. Even if they don't know some place, hi, this is so-and-so from UTA calling. Oh, shit, it's right. them.
They're going to pick up
the
phone.
I'm going to pick up the phone.
Right.
You know, it's that simple. I mean, it's not going to be, you know, I mean, a friend of mine just opened up a new company at AFM. He's like an office here, an office in Paris, and they got all this money out of Europe and some money out of Boston, and it's like, he's new. So, mm-hmm. you know, like, and I mean, and who knows him? And he mm-hmm. came from being like, a line producer on a bunch of big movies, but that's not someone who the creative community knows, right. You know. But it's like the smart agent is calling, but UTA is reading that article on Deadline and going,
"Oh yeah,
I'm calling them up."
Somebody is.
I'm calling them up.
Absolutely. And they're like, "Who has money?"
Yeah. Exactly. Because the thing is, it's something a friend of mine told me one time a year ago that made me think interesting about raising money. Something I'm going to tell Jeff about too. Mm-hmm. Is that investment money is a commodity. It needs to be spent.
Right.
It's got no fucking allegiance to anybody. It just needs to be spent. Mm-hmm. So it's up to you to kind of like just make something that's where it needs to be spent. You know, like money's not hard to find. Mm-hmm. It's, you know, it's really not. It's just, are you, you know, figuring out how to do it, you know?
Here's something else that's really important to mm-hmm. me, because mm-hmm. I'm a stickler about it, as you already know, and y'all know. Don't tell me you're going to call me back and you don't call me back. Okay?
Communication.
Yes. So you got to establish yourself mm-hmm. with whoever you're going to be with about communication.
Yep.
So I'm the type of person, I said in my first meeting with my manager, I said, what's the communication going to be? What do you expect?
Right.
Like, if I reach out to you, how long before should I expect to get back mm-hmm. for you to get back to me? And he says, an hour or two. He said, maybe on the weekends, maybe.
Yeah, a little bit longer.
You know what I mean? Whatever. Yeah. Mm-hmm. He said, I work all day.
Oh, dear.
You reach me at the office all day. After that, you can reach me on my cell phone. I was like, oh, I get to get the cell phone. You know what I mean? Because like, you don't know what the relationship is, right? And then when I went to UTA, the manager, the agent there said, I'll probably get back to you within a few hours. And if you don't hear from me, give me 24.
Yeah.
But you will hear from me in 24 hours. Yeah. And that's I was key. Like, perfect. Now that's I know key. What the rule is.
Yep.
Yeah. So I can't trip.
Okay.
If 24 hours goes by, 26 hours, I can start tripping.
Okay.
You know what I mean? No, you're right.
But in the middle of the night.
I'm like, no, I'm calling this bitch.
Okay, that's it.
I'm not going to talk shit about you right now.
It's so important. The two things you said, let's talk about the two things. It's so important to get the communication done, because one of the things that I had told that I learned, I think Craig Mazin was telling me this one time, and he was like, this is how you got to play people, not play them, but this is how you should take this as a strategy.
As a
strategy with them and with your career. Is he was like, maybe it's Glenn, was like, tell them that you'll update them on like every Friday morning about what's happened to you during the week. Did you meet anybody that they didn't know? Did you script? Like, I'll just give them an update too.
That's fair.
And they, so that the communication is not just one way.
Right.
So that so they're not
always
waiting.
CC their assistant.
Yeah.
Because they don't remember everything.
Yeah. You know, because the strategy thing, see, I remember when I was with Gershwin one time, I remember like every quarter, my brother and I would come up with like, this is what we want to do for the next quarter, mm-hmm. and come up with a big like a presentation about this is what we want to do,
like a slideshow,
PowerPoint. Yeah, this is what we want to do. Mm-hmm. What do you guys think? You know, like, is this stuff viable? Can it work? We're working on this. You know, like a quarter is 3 months. You know, like can this be completed in 3 months? This mm-hmm. a draft. You know, whatever. I mean, so because you need to look at it, especially when you start getting at these management companies with the big agencies, particularly big agencies, it is a business. Mm-hmm. And you, if you're smart, you've incorporated yourself, which means you are a business. Mm-hmm. So this is the ULLC. Right. What's your plan? Because every successful business has a plan, whether it's mm-hmm. quarterly plan, bi-monthly plan, 5-year, whatever. You got to have all that shit, because that just, and you adjust it as shit happens, but you got to do that. And then your rep has to be intimately involved with that plan, and let you know is it feasible, or tell you things like, oh, you think this is going to take 2 months, to 6 months? No, we do this in a month.
Right.
You know, but you got to communicate with them and let them know that.
But one step further, so you guys sit down and you say, okay, here are the three things I want to go after in these next couple months, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
It's the Big Bird biopic. It's whatever.
That's a hit.
It wasn't it? Okay. Well, the guy that played Big Bird, you know, he's still alive. That's the whole story. They did a documentary about him. But anyway. But you guys decide what the couple things are that you're going to work on. Now, what you do, because I was in a situation after you kind of laid out, here are the things I want. Here are things we're going to go after. Mm-hmm. And then after a couple months, nothing at all materializes. then what?
Mm. You got to let the person go.
That's exactly what I had to do.
Because again, it's like, that's where it's like you got to do the, that's why you do the monthly, I'm sorry, the weekly check-in. Say, this is what I'm doing. This is what I've done this week to follow our plan. Doing? What did you get done? Right. The plan. Because we talked about, you know, and he might get back to you, well, on Monday I'm going to do this, I'm going to do this, I'm going to do this, I'm going to follow, blah, blah, blah.
Or what I've heard is, I'm thinking, there's several big meetings I was going to get going for you. I was like, well, they're not going.
You so got to go.
It's not happening.
Yeah. That's why I had to let my old agent.
Or if you have you have one hope, like it was a certain... someone with a deal in town that he was like, that was his one great hope.
Oh, you were telling me. Yeah.
And I kept telling him, you're wasting your time.
You never put all your eggs in one
basket. He put all his eggs in one basket. Mm. And I was like, well, have they even read the script yet? And it was like, no, but it's over there. I was like, okay.
It doesn't matter if they read it and like it. They are not going to, you tell me that's not, this is the bullshit. This is the thing that, this. You know what? This is what, you know, my guy, Tim Ferriss, I love to listen to. He always says this thing. He was like, you get better results when you ask better questions. And the whole thing about you go in and ask a fucking agent or manager or company, like, and so what are you looking for? And like I say, oh, something good, because that's all they know how to say that's good, you know? Mm-hmm. I remember someone was telling me, like one of these things, you know, you find out what they've done and you just get an idea of kind of the range that they do. And you got to ask them, like, what's a movie that came out that you fucking would have killed to have done?
Yeah, that's a great question.
Because that point, they're like, because that focuses in on
what
their tastes are. Mm. They turn around and say, "Why would have done a Green Book?" You're like, you know, not for me. I'm gonna walk out of this fucking room right now.
Ooh, look at the time. Yeah, look at the time.
But turn around and say, "Fuck," you know, like I would have loved to have done X, and you're like, I love that movie too. Mm-hmm. But you can't, you know, preface that ahead of time. But you got to see what they say. Then it just helps you to focus to me. Because one of the things about meetings that are crazy is that I've learned that you have to steer the meeting on every aspect. I'm like, and say to yourself, like, well, so what do I want from this? And you go into meeting and say, because they sit there and go, because they'll come in here and ask you the question that fucking everyone hates is, you sit into the meeting and they say to you,
tell me about yourself.
And what do you got going on?
Right.
And you know what? That's going to be a quick answer.
Yeah.
It's going to be a quick
Keep
answer.
Keep that brief. Yeah.
Quick answer so you can pivot to, and what are you guys doing? Mm-hmm. What's the movie that came out that you guys would have killed?
What have you seen lately that really got you going?
Really yeah, because you know what?
What shows are you watching that really got you going?
Because again, it's my whole thing I say all the time, like executives and agents and shit like that, they don't get off on a project going. They can't. They didn't fucking spend any time on it. They didn't fucking like they didn't bleed on it. So there's other things that excite them. And that's what you got to do to figure out and say, how can I get them something that's going to excite them?
Right.
Get them passionate. Yeah. Because if they're passionate about this shit, they'll like expend the political capital to go to their boss or whatever hell it is. Mm-hmm.
But your manager has to get you in that room to begin with. If they can't do that, then it's...
Well, you're going to
step two. Step one is actually getting you in that room.
That's also the connotation that I think people always kind of make the mistake of too, is that your managers and your agents do not get you jobs. They put you in a position so that you can get the job. So you can't ever really like expect them to get a job. That's why if they're not getting you meetings, that means that I get put you in a position to get a job. Right. That means I got to pull the knife out and cut you.
I'm going to bring up two important points. One is, how often do you talk to them? So remember that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
The other thing is, I was saying earlier that I brought this job to my rep and went, you take it.
Yeah.
There's a reason for that. So first I'm going to talk about how often do you talk to them, right? Mm-hmm. I talk to my manager probably every day, and I'm not even sometime on the weekends, right? But that's just a relationship that we've started. Mm-hmm. Sometimes we're on Instagram talking about something, or on Twitter, whatever. Facebook, and he's a car guy and I am. Mm-hmm. So it's not always business.
Stuff. It's still about other
it's
stuff.
Not
okay.
always business.
Okay, got it.
So sometimes your manager has to become really cool with you too. He has to be somebody you want to hang out with sometimes. You know what I mean? To me. I think it's super.
It has to be
super important.
It has to be because he's representing you.
The agent you might talk to once a month,
right?
You know what I mean,
right?
I have a feeling I'm going to talk to mine more because he's a
different
little
functions.
More,
the manager's your long term career.
Yeah,
growth.
I mean it's two. It hasn't been a week yet. You know what I mean with my agent yet, but I get a sense that we're going to be talking a lot more than a normal agent would. He keeps a small roster so that he could do that. So that's possible.
Good to know. That's another question you got to ask before you sign with someone.
I was talking about time and, taking a job to them. Yeah. The other reason is, there's a couple of things. I've talked about this many times on the show. Mm-hmm. You do it, number one, because they know how to negotiate, mm-hmm. right? They know how to negotiate points. They know how to negotiate exactly what you're supposed to be making. They know mm-hmm. how to negotiate extra stuff that you wouldn't have thought of. It's not just about their 10%. People think, oh, they just want their 10%. No, there's other shit in there that they're looking for that mm-hmm. you would have never come up with.
Yeah. When are you gonna
without having a lawyer?
Where are you on the waterfall? You know what I mean?
All of those things. Where
can
are
you come to set?
Yeah.
You know, all that shit.
Yeah. You know what I mean? Yeah. Your first class ticket to go to the set. Yeah. All of that stuff. They know how to get all that stuff. So why not let them handle? It's worth 10% for them to get all that stuff done.
Yep.
And it's worth 10% for them to give you more money.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Because you would have just taken what they would have given you.
Because you're happy to just have a job. Yeah.
Because it's scale. You know what I mean?
It's scale, and you're absolutely right, everything. Because that's the thing that I think people don't get is that there's a lot of people who complain about their agents, and I'm like, but motherfucker, you're not getting scale.
Right.
You're not even getting scale plus 10. You're probably getting like 3 times scale, and you're still complaining. But you're only getting 3 times scale because your agent has, or your manager has sold your value.
Right.
That you're worth 3 times that, or like whatever your quote is, mm-hmm. because that's what they have to do.
Right.
And the thing is,
again, being a sponsor,
because you might say to yourself, well, if I got X amount of money to cover my bills for the year and blah 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 blah, blah, and you're like, okay, so I'm gonna take this, and I'm in your head, you go with that. But your manager's like, no, motherfucker, if I get you 4 times that, then everyone's gonna know you're that good of a writer that you claim that much money.
You want a quote?
Well,
yeah.
Here's the thing with writers: we tend to get a little bit insecure and sit and think, oh, mm-hmm. we're not that good, or we have imposter syndrome, or whatever. So you need someone sort of outside entity to just sort of say, no. This is where you need to be, and this is what we're going to go for. Right. Mm-hmm. Because a lot of times we lack the confidence ourselves, or mm-hmm. even just like the belief,
right.
or we've been out of work for so long,
you start having that self-doubt creeping.
I just need to get back working again.
Right. Well, you start cheating, like that movie everyone needs to see. Fucking, Can You Ever Forgive Me? The author without a work for a long time. She said, you guys need to see that movie. It's awesome.
Yeah.
But there's a bunch of things you got to think about. First of all, it is a lot easier to get a manager than it is mm-hmm. to get an agent.
For sure.
Like you said before, Chris, agents have to sign with that business. What do they call it?
The signatory.
Yeah, they have to become.
Yeah, it's a WGA. They have to be a WGA signatory.
They actually have to go through all the paperwork in order to
be licensed.
And have to be licensed, a business license.
Right.
Whereas, like you said, a manager, you can just pop up anywhere. So,
and just start having clients and make a call.
So you have to be really careful with who you pick. I mean, I always suggest to people, like we have Jenny Frankfurt, for example, who used to be a big manager and an agent. I'm like, you want somebody who probably was like some old manager at some big company, somebody who used to be an agent who's now a manager, somebody who has some history.
Do they know someone in your – does someone else in your circle – are they rep by them?
Right. Have they heard of them?
Yeah.
Do they have other people on staff?
Yep.
Or have they sold movies?
Yep.
Et cetera, et cetera. If they're just
– yeah.
You know, Joe Blow, that'll do you no good to have you have a manager.
I totally agree.
You know what
and
I mean?
I'm so, you know, I mean, the onesie, like I had a onesie agent, the first person I signed was just a woman working out of her house kind of thing. Mm-hmm. I'll never do that again.
Right. Never
because
do that.
Because she just didn't have the contacts or she couldn't really make the calls or even just to, like, you know, get my script anywhere.
And here's something.
And that's sad.
Tell you.
I mean, I guess because that's the old model where you could be one person mm-hmm. out here working in the industry, but mm-hmm. the times have changed and you just can't do anything. Even with the managers now, it's like now we got management companies.
Right.
Your agents and managers all day long, if they're not dealing with your stuff, they should be like my manager and my agent, they're always like at some meeting at some reps at for lunch.
Their network is big. Yes.
And the thing is that the
sitting at the house,
the person
that ain't meeting nobody.
But see,
I'm sorry.
No, but even if you're working out of your house, I mean, just because you don't have whatever. The thing is, if you're working out of your house, the problem with that is you're not even generating enough client income to sustain an office.
Yep.
And that means you're not getting enough people. You know, and the possibility that you have an assistant,
mm-hmm.
but it's unlikely.
Right.
You know, and it's just kind of like, what the hell with that? I mean, like, to me, the thing with the agent is, and it has to go back to what we talked about, I think, the previous last week about this packaging thing.
Right.
The agents only want you if they go, you have shit that I can sell. There's no career development that is on their fucking radar anymore. They're like, I need to sell this shit and fucking make my quota so I can be partner and get part of the dance, you know, and so I can get my third house because I'm getting that partner pull from everyone's money because Will Smith is at the agency. Yeah. I'm getting some of his money at this point if I'm a partner. Right. But if I'm not the partner, then so there's all that shit that's going on. And that's what, I mean, and that's why agents... That's why their rosters are bigger too, because they're not fucking developing nobody. They're just like, I need 50 people who I can sell those, who half of them will sell me a show this year or sell me a movie because I'm on my fucking car and shit. Go ahead.
Well, let me bring up another red flag because I went through a few with this previous manager I had.
Give it to him.
If you have a script and the rep is like not bothering to send it out. Mm-hmm. Not because he feels like, hey, I got notes and we got to fix some things and there's some story issues, story character. Like, if there's, you know, if he had notes on the script and it's like, okay, fine, I got to work on it, go out. No, your comment is, well, no one's buying this right now.
Oh.
And so he won't send it out. I'm like, but bro,
right.
Even if they're not buying...
It's still a great sample.
It's still a great sample that could get me work.
See, nobody's buying my Black Wall Street, but it's getting me everywhere.
Exactly.
Right now.
And he didn't seem to grasp that. So I was like, okay, that's another reason why you have to go.
But see, he got the mentality of a fucking agent. Not that, I don't say that pejoratively, but it's like, I need to sell this. Mm-hmm. He's not really thinking about your career.
Because
here's the thing about, if you got a great sample, it might not sell for... tons of reasons.
So why they came up with a blacklist.
Mm-hmm. But it could, mm-hmm. but the shit could get you a job on a show.
Right.
It could get you an open writing assignment. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's the thing that people don't get all the time is open writing assignments. Mm-hmm. That shit is just all over town. I mean, because
we have to have someone who's plugged in to know when those are happening. Again, when you're with the onesie in her, you know, in her house or whatever, she doesn't know what the open assignments are, so she can't even like propose you.
You know, and honestly, it's maybe easier to get a job as open assignment than it's something new, because open assignment is like, well, we just bought these four, you know this book,
that's YA books, and we don't know what to do with it.
Or it's a fucking New York Times bestseller, and they want that. Want that done, mm-hmm. but you know, except if I come in with a great spec that's like, wow, I don't know, this is amazing, but no one's done anything like this.
Yeah. But you could go do this.
Then they're kind of like, I don't know if I can sell that because no one's done anything like it, and it won't fit into the matrix.
Here's the one thing that I was going to talk about. You were talking about sometimes you have an agent or a manager, and for whatever reason,
it's
you feel like
out.
It's time to go.
Yeah.
My suggestion is this: don't just go.
Right. Have something.
Find
else.
Somebody else.
Yeah.
Then go. Because here's why. You ever notice that... I'm just going to keep it real. You know me.
You got to have some overlap.
The girl's got a boyfriend.
Say it. Say it.
This evil one over here.
Say it.
You ever notice when... no, I'm kidding.
I'm waiting for... I'm on edge of my
trip.
Seat.
Go
I'm
ahead.
You notice when you want to do something, all of a sudden something happens? Mm. So say it's like, well, I'm going to let them go next week.
Mm-hmm.
The day before, hey, Linnell, we just got a call about you from, you ain't heard from him in 4 months,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
You just did it now, didn't you?
See? That's
what I'm saying. So where I'm going with that is, that's why you don't just let them go.
Yeah.
Because they're still on your roster and they're still a stamp. You still need a stamp. This Hollywood is full of... It's kind of like
validation.
Somebody
stamp.
Has validated you. Somebody's saying, you know, oh, your rep.
He's quality.
You can say you have a rep. Mm-hmm. And the reason why you need to say you have a rep is you don't want to be the one going, oh, yeah, well, let me send my stuff. It's better to say, let my rep send it. That's
for sure.
That's protocol.
For sure.
Yeah. Plus, the whole thing on that is the thing that I remember Charles Murray had said, and I believe this too, but he was saying this one time, is that if you don't have a rep, and you talk to someone and you talk up a good, you talk whatever it is, they give you the side eye.
Mm-hmm.
Your script probably can't be that good.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, for sure.
It's like
you're not stamped. We just said that.
Yeah, it's like you're not being SAG or not being the Writers Guild. It's like you're still not there yet. You can't be that good because
no one. I mean, like no one jumped on it,
right.
And because like you've been saying, there's a whole lot of chumps who could be managers anywhere. Be anywhere.
Right.
You know, I mean, to me, look, I've been in the same boat. I have not had a representation in a long time, mainly because people who come and ask me to do it. Well, with me, it's like I've been at that level with people who are. I've been at a higher place. I was at Gersh, not the highest place, but a good place. Mm-hmm. And I've been at lower places, and I mean, lower places, you face all those issues that we're talking about, and mm-hmm. and those could be months or years of your life yep. that are fucked up. And yep. the worst thing is, if you send a project out through someone who's not like you, almost burn the project because if the wrong person is sending it out, it might not get read, or might not get read by the right person. Like I remember one time, we had a meeting. And we met with Original Film. I had this great, great meeting with the big exec. And we were talking about doing this. This is actually, we were talking about doing the Luke Cage movies. This is years ago. And like Tyrese was attached to it. And at the time, like a good friend of mine from high school was Tyrese's,
Hey, using them.
You told me a story about something in a trunk and.
I'm not going to do that. We'll get to that later. But a good friend of mine was Tyrese's assistant. And so he set us up a meeting to we pitched Tyrese our take on the Luke Cage movie. And then, you know, and Tyrese is like, oh, well, then go meet with the people at Original and let them know. I mean, I'm down with that, so let's bring it up. And we did the meeting at Original and pitched the woman at Original. She thought it was a really cool idea. But our agent sent the script to a different executive out there.
Right.
And that person read it.
Didn't respond to it.
But I was like, that's not the right person.
That's the wrong
person.
That's another key attribute your rep needs to have.
It to this person because this person wanted it for them to buy.
Be discerning.
Right. They fucking wanted to read it to see if we do so the job, you know, because they want to buy that. I was like, I know they wouldn't have been going to buy that. She told us that in the meeting they wouldn't do that type of movie, but they wanted to see it for as a writing sample. And I was so pissed. And I was like, this motherfucker's got to go. Because he now fucked up a situation because now it's in their system, you know, as a pass.
He had the juice to get you with that one exec you didn't want, but not the juice to get you
Chris had to go in
with the right one.
Chris had to go in like Daniel Kaluuya in Widows, the gym scene.
Exactly.
And said, what was you doing?
I'm just rapping.
All right, let me hear it. Let's hear it.
I love that scene.
Boom, boom, boom. And it's done. Next scene.
That's
not what I asked you to do. What did you do?
Did we tell you when we interviewed him about that they kind of improvised that scene?
They lost their original location.
They lost their location. Yeah. Okay.
I was like, how do we do this?
But that's filmmaking, though.
Yeah.
I mean, you're like, all right, what's nearby? Oh, this is Jim. All right, production design, get in there. Yeah. Put some shit on
now,
the wall.
We're going to do it now, too, because we have to release the light.
Dan, you're going to be here. And we're going to get the track plate down. We're going to go 360 around them as we're doing this rap thing. All right.
We got one take. Go.
Amazing.
That's filmmaking. That's how you do it.
But there's a lot of things in here. There's a book on managing your agent.
Yeah.
What's his name?
I have the book at home.
I have it too.
It's a green book.
There's one called like how to agent your agent.
How to manage your I'm gonna look it up right now. Y'all keep talking.
I used to talk to him all the time, and I can't remember. Actually, I was gonna have him on the show a couple of years ago, and I can't remember his fucking name off the top of my head. You'll hit it. Mm-hmm. But anyway, so there's a bunch of other stuff that you could learn about this stuff. For a lot of the young writers, I mean, these are just things you might need to know. But please know, these are just our experiences. There's a lot more within what we're talking about for you to think about. Every agent and manager is different.
Yeah.
You know, doesn't matter what level they are. Some, like you were talking about the boutique agents or managers, Chris. Mm-hmm. You know, we both have had those. Mm-hmm. And some of them are good, too. You know what I mean? It depends on what's the best thing for you. It's about the relationships that they have. You know, like you said, we were talking earlier about somebody earlier, bitches. about you. I forget you were saying something about something. They ask, well, do you know anybody? I'm like, no, bitch, shouldn't you know?
Right.
Yeah. Why are you asking me?
Right. Right.
Do I know?
Oh, look at the time.
What was that? It was something. You know what I'm talking about. It's like,
I do.
Oh, my God.
I'm sorry. That's anyway. What I'm coming to you for.
Right. I can't find the name of the book right now.
Okay.
We'll put it
Chad,
in the show notes.
Chad something.
Yes. You know,
Chad Gurvich or something.
Chad Gurvich. Yeah.
That's it.
No, good dude.
Yeah, it's called Managing Your Reps or something like that. Managing your agents or something.
Yeah, I mean, just don't nobody be too quick to sign with anyone because I know you work really hard and you finally won a contest, you finally got some attention.
And you get excited. You're like, I'm legit.
You know.
Well, you need to paint that scenario then. So say you're going to meet with some, let's just say a bigger agency.
Yeah.
And they want to sign you.
Right.
and everybody's telling you not to, how do you handle that in a room?
I'm sorry. Give it
how
to
do
me
you
again.
Handle that in a situation?
Like, in the, like say I'm in the room with CAA, yeah, and they're like, "Oh, we
great,
want to
sign we would
you.
Love to sign you." You know what I mean?
Well, I mean, me, I always tell them I don't impulse buy on anything. So, guys, let me
take this for a
let
minute.
Me take it home and think and let it digest and think it over. Like, this is all really exciting and stuff's happening.
People
really
respect
fast.
That,
right?
And like, yeah, let me just give it some thought. Now you gotta be a person of your word. If you don't go 2 months. And never.
You
got to
get back
answer.
To them within that
gotta,
week.
Yeah, yes. I'd say within a day or two, you got to be back at them. Mm-hmm. But take some time to think it over. I don't care who it is, even if it sounds like fantastic.
Right.
You got to you wouldn't go on a lot for a car. Mm-hmm. Maybe some people do. I would never on a car lot and be like, "Ooh, the red one. Exactly. I want that one. So, let me buy it."
Right. No negotiation.
No. Okay. You gotta, and then take that time to go do your homework. Right. Mm-hmm. So go find who else is rep by this person. Mm-hmm. How many times have they had people on the blacklist? How many times have they gotten people, who do they rep that's on staff? Who do I know?
Right.
You got to do your homework first before you say, all right, because this is like a marriage almost, like a level below marriage. Whereas, because you're talking about your relationship with your manager, I mean, you're talking to him every day and you're talking about stuff outside. Like, you have almost a pseudo friendship also.
Yeah.
A working,
I really like
a working friendship. That's great.
That's super duper.
Not everyone's gonna be at that level, whatever. But you gotta have something that works for you. Is what I'm gonna say, because everyone's different. Like, I don't really want to talk cars and stuff, and
But there might be
work.
Another.
But there
connection
might be another thing, right? Might be another thing.
That, for me, it was my cars and my scooters and stuff like that that we just.
Well, yeah, because
connected
on. it's like the other day when I was doing my reading, I was talking with one of the guys afterwards, and he he mentioned something about how he's like, I'm geeking out of my cars, and you talk about these old Porsches, and I was like, oh, so you have this one and this one and this one, these defunct models, and he was like, oh, you know about those cars? I was like, yeah. He's like, you know what you should do? I was like, but I've never driven a 911. He's like, oh, you should come out to my place and drive one. I got three. I was like, by all means, I want to drive. I do want to drive one. So so you never know, what comes out of those beyond the business conversation, I mean, it's just a guy that I met. It's not like I'm going to be best friends with this guy, and that's how it is with your.
It's about
your
finding that
agent.
Connection, when you go in to meet with an executive, you're looking
around
the room,
you're
trying to find
what
a connection.
I know,
Or you go online, you do some research. You go, he likes boats. Yeah. Or whatever the fuck, you know
what I
mean?
Know about sailing.
Exactly, and you start to figure out how do you work that into your conversation. And then and all of a sudden you're like, oh my God, really clicked.
Or sometimes I go in meetings and the exec is like, oh my God, my daughter, she's thinking about, she wants to fly, and I don't know. I was like, let me tell you.
Yeah.
Know what I mean? Even softer, I was like, oh, well, there's an air show coming up in San Diego. You can take her down there. She could look at the stuff, whatever. Mm-hmm. I've done that before. Right. Just sort of give them
Blue Angels.
No, Blue Angels are Navy.
No, that's old.
They're okay. No, they're not old. Blue Angels are Navy. They're fine.
Right.
They're not Air Force.
They're not the Air Force Falcons who flew over the Captain Marvel premiere the other day.
Oh, that's right. They did.
Tight-ass formation.
Yeah, that's right.
Those are the Air Force Falcons.
That's right.
Fuckers. So y'all need to know.
Recognize.
Yeah. Exactly. You see that white airplane with the red and blue trim. It's going to be tight.
You already know.
But be careful out there. I guess when we're talking about reps and everything. Don't stay in an unhappy relationship either.
Exactly.
I've done that a few times. Like, just stay. Because, again, it's better to have somebody than nobody. But try and figure out how you can get that next person to come along. Like, I was in a bad situation as one guy. But luckily, my saving grace was I did one of those labs at Film Independent last year. And so they put out a directory of all their lab fellows.
Right.
And so that went around town. And so a couple managers, just thumbing through that, were like, oh, because they have your picture and your bio and what you wrote or whatever. So I got contacted by a couple managers that way.
Mm-hmm.
And some, fell off the radar. Like, I sent them my sample. I was like, here's the other thing. When someone contacts you as a manager, say, oh, I'm interested in you, I sent them a piece of work that I was like, this is the hill I fucking die on.
Send them the best thing you have.
This is the hill I fucking, if you don't get this, then you don't get me.
Right.
I wouldn't say it's the best thing I've ever written, but it's the thing that I'm like, if you don't get me, you don't understand what I'm trying to do in this town in terms of representation of female veterans, on screen that we haven't seen before. That's the hill I'll die on. Right. So I'm going to send you the script and see how you react to it. If you come back with it didn't really connect, Okay, yeah. You're not the one for me.
Right.
Because I'm trying to, I have my own little agenda that I'm trying to push. Right, right or
you,
wrong.
You should have some sort of agenda. Mm-hmm.
But I have my little, my, I have my wheelhouse that I'm passionate about.
That's how you write stuff that means something to you. Yeah. Right. That's why you're being a hack. You're not making it work. You're just, like, you're trying to follow what the market's going to buy. You never know what the market's going to buy.
No.
It's like, you know, this, you guys, like, I don't know people buying in this town. Motherfucker, you don't know what, you don't know what someone's going to buy.
Right.
You, I mean, there's always the staples that are going to be bought, like the medical show, the legal show, the cop show, and the action film and shit like that is going to get bought. But and the stupid comedy is going to get bought.
Yeah.
But everything else is not that. I mean, you know.
Which, my goodness. Ahead. Another thing. If your rep doesn't know what shows are fucking on the air right now, when you come to them, if you come to them and say, oh, yeah, dude works on Super, you know, or Arrow, whatever. Mm. And they're like, what's Arrow? That's a problem. That's a red flag. If they don't know.
I know there's 400 shows, but you should know the big
ones. You should know, the at least ones. Know the one, or at least be familiar with, oh, isn't that like, you know,
Blanty? Yeah, see, the small shows, like, I saw this show. You guys got to watch this show called Secret City. It's on Netflix. Season 2 just dropped. It's so fucking good.
I don't expect people to know that type of show.
But people are going
to
know that show. They're not going to know the show.
You should know network stuff and the major players on streaming.
But yeah. Yeah,
That's a big red flag
because that's
right
where the money is in those big shows. Like,
well, no, I'm just saying they should know what those are and who has the deals where and who's producing those shows. If they don't know that.
Here's something you have to say in your first meeting, not when you first start, toward the end, right? Trust me on this one. You have to say, in your own words, this is for people of color, right? You have to say, look,
I know where this is going.
You have to say, look. I know the script you read had a lot of black people in it. Please don't just consider me for that.
Oh, you see, he said it.
Yeah.
You have.
Okay.
Trust me.
It has to be. If you don't say it,
that's another problem.
They're
going to
assume and put you in a box.
That's another problem.
You are our black writer for black stuff.
If you don't tell them, they will not know. They think they're doing you a favor.
Yep.
They're like, oh, well, you're a black guy. I was sending you over to Will
when
Packer.
I hear that someone's looking for a black writer, I specifically send you for that.
No.
Yeah.
No.
I'm more than that. So then you got to find your rebuttal for why. Like, you have an amazing one to me. Just your history and, you know, flying planes. Yeah. Yeah. That alone separates you.
But he started sending me for black things. Right. Like, they're looking for a black writer.
He's fucking up. He's fucking up.
Well, he's gone.
He's
fucking
up.
He's gone.
Yeah. Yeah.
But find your reason why. So I'll go back and start talking about some shit about me, or I'll go and talk about my husband and growing up with this older white guy and, you know, having a different lifestyle, traveling the world, whatever it is.
It all matters.
To show them, you know, I know almost every country fucking person on the radio. Just tell me which one. I'll tell you who it is. You know what I mean? I let you know I'm not your regular dude.
Yeah.
Right?
Right.
Yes, I can write that too, but I can write that too. So you have
to
let them know.
I'm a nuanced individual.
Right.
Right.
I am not your regular, whatever you think we are.
Right.
I could do that.
Stereotypical black dude.
And I could do this.
Right.
And I always tell them, because I'm just not afraid, and we've talked about this many times, you don't live in my world. I live in yours. So I know yours better than you know me. You know what I mean? I'm not afraid to say that. You know what I mean? I need to engrade them. And here's a cool thing. I got John so good at it, he came with us to the UTA meeting.
Oh.
So I was just about to bring it up, and John said, I got one more thing to say. Please don't just submit him for blah, 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 like as if it was his,
there you go.
As if it was his
okay,
idea.
Okay.
And I looked at him, I was like, okay,
okay.
Back me up then. Okay whatever.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, that's important, because you'll get stuck in that writer's ghetto, and then there might be some amazing projects that you're interested in writing, and
they're not thinking of you.
They're not thinking of you. Like, I love stuff to do with surfing or ocean or anything that has to do with, like, any maritime type stuff, because I used to work on a maritime ship, you know, and I used to go do all that stuff, and it's like, they would probably say, oh, you're a black chick with the historical,
you probably don't even swim.
Bird don't even swim, and you're gonna do this. I'm like, child, I am trying to live endless summer.
That goes back to my original point that I started with, is like, you know, you have these conversations with them. They need to be able to retain the fact that you have these certain interests outside of the writing, that you're into, you know, 1950s, you know, poodle skirts, whatever it is that you're into.
Yeah, because it's
they got to retain that.
It's funny because it's like, I was talking with Linnell a couple of weeks ago. Some short film kicked around, and I was kind of complaining about it.
Right.
And she was like, "I bet you don't even like period films." I was like, "Whoa! I love period movies. I love them."
No, hang on. Let's back up.
I'm not denying, but the thing is, you let people know that you like that.
I sent that to you as an example of there was a period short film done on what was clearly a budget, and you could say they had a couple locations, but they had the costumes and everyone. They were able to do something on a limited budget that's period. Because a lot of times people are like, "Oh, you're doing a short film," and people don't even think of doing period.
Because they're dumb; they don't know you can do them for cheap.
Right. But you got to do it right.
Right.
I mean, you have to plan it right. And so that's all I'm saying. Like, they figured out a way to do it, and whether you had issues with the directing and what angle she was using, we got into all that. And I'm like, look,
they did the thing.
For cheap.
That's true. And I get that, but
I was bolstered by that, and you shat on it. because you didn't like the end. Like, look at the shot she's doing. The takes are too short. She keeps cutting.
You S-H-A-T on it.
Yes.
Shat on
but
it.
But see, here's
you the, did it on him.
But see, did you watch Ridicule? Did you watch Ridicule?
No, I got it at home, though.
That's the thing I tell people all the time. Because I spent time in Germany and France when I was, like, in high school and junior high. It's like, I love that
when
time.
I was bougie and uppity as you, okay?
Damn.
No, I'm sorry.
I'm not. But so what if I am? Keep these other niggas down. Keep them down.
Let's call it a comeback.
You know I'm messing
on
with
that
you.
Note,
you know I'm messing hilarious. With you. He's like, what? I'm not. Okay, but what if I am? But no, you know, Chris knows I'm messing with him because we've had these conversations online about.
No, but it's one of these.
We're
things,
both uppity as hell.
Right. But the thing is this: is that like I think people would be.
I'm lowbrow bougie, like, just you know, so y'all know.
That those films, like those films about like the like from the 17th, 18th, 19th centuries in Europe. I think those movies are fascinating because those movies. They do something about humanity in a way that is really ugly, but they do it in a very pretty setting, and that's when that's why I love Barry Lyndon. That's why I think Barry Lyndon is one of Kubrick's best films because the violence in that movie is there's like two scenes of violence, but it's more impactful than the violence in say Clockwork Orange because it's like. This is an environment that's not supposed to be violent like this.
Mm-hmm.
But he's showing you, oh yeah, doesn't matter how you dress it up.
It's always going to be there.
Really ugly. Mm-hmm. And that's what usually happens in those movies. That's what I was saying about Ridicule. Like Ridicule is this French movie about the French court where there's this thing where you had to be able to they would crack on each other. Really hard. Mm-hmm. And if you couldn't handle cracking, then you got banished from the court, you know? And it opens in this really interesting way. This won't ruin it. It's this opening scene, but it's this is old man. He's like he's in a wheelchair and he can't do anything. And he's dying. And this younger guy walks into his house and he's like, "Do you remember me from like 10 years ago?" He's like, "I don't remember." And just pulls out his dick and pees on him. And he's like, "Cause this is how you treated me."
That's like a Dave Chappelle skit.
I was like, "God damn!"
And throws the dude down the stairs.
He said, there's a nickname that you made everyone call me and that I couldn't live down and I had to leave the country. So now I'm back. You're dead. Now I'm just like, fuck, you're going to pee on this dude? And it was so, it's such a weird way.
He took it because he's
in a wheelchair. He can't get up.
Right.
And I was like, this is such a great way to set up a movie in this time because who fucking pees on?
The Berlin thing.
Yeah. It's just wild shit. But that's why I love those movies. But I think that's the type of movie that, again, going back to the black conversation, it's like, you know, are you going to write that stuff? And because I love that stuff.
That's your job to let them know.
No. You have to let them know.
And they have to remember that you want to do that.
Because
otherwise, they can submit you for that.
Right.
Yeah,
right.
Like, hey.
And that's why when people ask you about doing your Orson Welles, that's why.
Yeah.
That's your example of, I gave you an example of something that I love because I love history and I love whatever, blah, 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 blah. So on that note, we going over 130 something?
You know what? So what? Well,
You're giving them good information, good
info to have.
And if you need to, you can do a two-parter.
Learn from our lessons.
Right.
Yeah.
Indeed. So we talked about Luke Perry.
Yes, we did.
And
we talked about your reps. Yeah.
We talked about the reps.
Mm-hmm. think we covered what
Lisa Bola Kaiser was here. You was quiet today.
No, I'm less because I want you guys to make sure you guys give these people a lot of good information and game because you're in the midst of these things right now. So it's like, I'm just
going to talk to you afterwards.
I'm the amen corner.
Interesting. Yes, indeed. Mm-hmm. Where you at, Linnell White?
Oh, I'm on Twitter at Linnell White, LYNELLEWHITE. That's cool. It.
Chris Derrick.
Unauthorized CBD on Twitter and Instagram and shadowboxercinema.net.
Cool. Lisa Colt Jam.
On Twitter, what fresh hell is this?
All right. I'm your host, Hilliard Guest. You guys can find me on Twitter at Hilliard Guest. You guys can follow the show, Screenwriters RR, on Twitter. Any questions, screenwritersrantroom@gmail.com. Please go on iTunes, Stitcher, Apple Podcasts, whatever you guys listen to. Give us a 5-star review. We really need that for the metrics. Where are we at, Chris?
We are on the Patreon page, and there's going to be a link in the show notes. And I'm going to give a shout out to Skylar Ezell, to Dietri King Bay, to Jeffrey Thorne, Scott
Jeff.
Beck, and to Brian Woods, to Rob Greenspan, to Melvin Todd, and Kiana Nguyen for supporting us. We guys love everything about you.
Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you, guys. We appreciate that shit. A lot of good shit going on. Deadly Class is doing great. You know, they still haven't announced season 2 yet, but you know, we'll see what happens. My episode was cool. That was fun.
I love that episode. It was really well done.
I know, but I was stuck. Like literally I was stuck up the mountain. Like I couldn't leave because the roads were closed. So there was no way I was getting down.
Yeah, it was raining that week, wasn't it?
No, we had so much water come down. It rained for 24 hours. And then whenever we have the big rains or the snows, because of the fires and stuff, we always have like these mudslides. The last 4 weeks, literally they've been closing both sides of the roads and one side is jacked up. Mm-hmm. And it was like, there was no way I was going to make it down and be able to get back up because I would be taking the chance of not being able to get back up the mountain with the kids.
Those kids need you.
Good. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So if it was a weekend, yay! I would have been there, but it's like, the road is closed.
So anyway, y'all know how we do it on a rant room on this show. We keep it real. What? We keep it opinionated.
Okay.
We keep it what, everybody?
2019.
Peace, y'all.
Ciao.
I'ma say what I feel, and I promise to keep it real.
Welcome to the rant room. Well, you gotta be a rider till your fears are diminishing, the doubts are behind ya. It's hard to grind and the business got me stressed. In the rent room, we let that shit up off our chest. You know the street nerd has got no time for no caca. Sass in class, yes, that's Mr. Bola Kaja. Never have to guess when you're listening to Hilliard. He gon' bring more game than a shark playing billiards. It's all about the crap of screenwriting. It's exciting when you turn an outline into something enlightening. Your pen and words are like bullets in a gun. Write what you feel, say what you want. Welcome to the Red Room.